Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A new project called Gasping for Justice seeks to create awareness about the current COVID-era conditions people are experiencing at Prince George's County Jail in Maryland. The project has actors, musicians, writers, and scholars and activists like Jesse Williams, Fiona Apple, and Alec Baldwin reading the sworn statements of people incarcerated there. A civil rights group has filed a federal lawsuit about the alleged unsanitary conditions. Here's an excerpt from one of the sworn statements read by Kiana Johnson, the founder of the organization Life After Release.
I was working sanitation detail right before I got sick. We were the guys who would clean the jail and give people their trays, meaning food. As of March and early April, we had no masks to protect ourselves and others while we were working our jobs. It seemed like the whole unit had COVID. Everyone was coughing and sneezing. There was no social distancing. People would be shoulder to shoulder on the phones and were sleeping in bunks on top of one another in open areas. We could not stay 6 feet apart from each other in the bunks, even if we tried.
Reports have emerged of people in jails being denied access to basic hygiene supplies like soap and clean clothing, healthcare supplies like Tylenol and masks, and the refusal of medical treatment, even when presenting with serious COVID-19 symptoms. Keep in mind, jails are routinely overcrowded, which prevents social distancing measures from being enforced, and add to it the practice of holding people in jail prior to trial who can't pay bail. Join us now to walk us through all of this and what's being done to stop this treatment of incarcerated individuals is Scott Hechinger. He was a public defender in Brooklyn for almost a decade and is currently the founder and director of an organization called Zealous, whose objective is to move public defenders' advocacy outside of the courts to end mass criminalization. Zealous is behind the Gasping for Justice project, which is part of their broader efforts around the country to amplify the experiences of people who are directly affected by mass incarceration. Scott, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on and for talking about this issue amidst all the noise and everything else going on.
So I want to just get some nuts and bolts down about the lawsuit. When was it filed and how many plaintiffs are there?
The lawsuit was filed back at the very early stages of COVID, so in late March and April. And there are dozens of people who are involved in the litigation, over 60. And of those, the majority of them filed these sworn declarations, which were being heard in court by an audience of one, this one federal judge, who, despite hearing or at least reading the words of folks that were on the inside talking about absolutely deplorable, horrific, cruel, unsanitary, and inhumane conditions, wasn't moved. She called the sworn declarations only marginally relevant, unhelpful, complained she couldn't call the chaff from the wheat. And that was the stage at which we stepped in and started working with Civil Rights Corps, the local defender, and also Kiana Johnson of Life After Release.
So why did you decide to turn these sworn statements into these videos? And how do you think the format change? What impact do you think it can have?
So today, the violence perpetrated by government, state, police, in the streets is more visible and accessible than ever before because of iPhone cameras or iPhones and cameras, phones, and the ability to upload it on social media really quickly. And it's become powerful enough to spark a national conversation, not just about reform in heavy quotation marks, but also about real true transformation of how we invest our money. But the violence inside of courts and jails, which are literally built to silence people, blocked by physical walls, insulated, as I saw every day as a public defender, by the legalese of kind of the daily process. The violence inside of courts is made largely invisible, even though it's no less real, and even more so during the pandemic. And so from the time early on when I was a public defender and throughout the entire time I was a public defender, I was constantly thinking about ways to things that I was seeing in my expertise and perspective, but also working collaboratively with the people I represented to take the stories outside of court, to try to end the systemic injustice and policies and practices that drove that injustice inside. And during COVID, that silence, invisibility was made even harder. You know, was made even more pronounced. It was even harder to get for loved ones to get on the phone with their loved ones inside. Visitation stopped, and so around the country, but including in PG County, in Prince George's County, Maryland, defenders were banging their heads against the wall. Judges were issuing form denials for release motions. Even in compassionate release cases, this federal judge was doing nothing. Kiana Johnson and her organization, Life After Release, had a court watch program of one, and their letters to judges and prosecutors weren't doing enough. So we're thinking, how can we, not only in Prince George's County, but around the country, still center the voices of the people who are actually directly impacted? As I'll tell you, me just talking about this issue is not going to move the needle. The data, which is horrifying, is not moving the needle. How do we get voices out there? And in Prince George's County, we couldn't get audio. We got audio in other places. We couldn't get audio of the voices. That would have been the preference. Obviously, the preference would have been they were out and able to tell tell it themselves. But we got their permission. We worked with the local advocates, their defenders, to ask for the permission to have them amplified in any way. And we did it. And that audience of one turned into an audience of over 2 million. Thousands of petition signatures, $25,000 raised for a bail for Kiana Johnson's bail fund to be able to bail people out. The court watch program went from a volunteer of one to now 175. The top prosecutor in the county, Aisha Braveboy, claimed progressive but not doing anything to release people, was put on the defensive. Was actually had to go on NPR to defend her record, unsuccessfully, I'd say, And the narrative really started shifting. And in terms of the litigation itself, the settlement or the civil rights litigation entered settlement negotiations in large part because of this public attention. And so it's a start. Unfortunately, I'll tell you more about the update about numbers and where things are at in current conditions. It's a long road. But the thought is the more advocacy, the more visibility that you can have, the better.
My guest is Scott Hechinger. We're talking about Gasping for Justice. Let's play another clip. This is an excerpt read by singer Fiona Apple, reading one of these sworn statements. This is about a minute long.
For the first 3 hours, they made me sit in the isolation cell without any linens. I kept asking for sheets and blankets, and I had to kick my cell door just to get their attention. I told them that I was feeling very cold and feeling very sick, and I just wanted linen so that I could go to bed. Finally, after 3 hours, they gave me linens, but they were dirty. The sheets were stained with big yellow drool stains. I asked for clean sheets, but they wouldn't give me new sheets. So I put the stained end of the sheets toward the foot of my bed so at least they wouldn't be near my face. When they moved me out of the isolation cell to the 10-man cell, the COs also had me put my sheets in a red bag labeled hazardous. Then, when I went over to the 10-man cell, they told me they weren't going to give me fresh sheets after all. They made me pull my dirty sheets back out of the red hazard bag, even though there was other contaminated stuff in there. And those are the sheets I'm still sleeping in now. When we really need something, the staff will open the door and throw stuff at us through the door. It makes me feel like an animal.
That was Fiona Apple reading one of these sworn statements. So, Scott, how did someone like Fiona Apple, or Alec Baldwin, friend of the station, get involved with the project?
As silly as it sounds, Twitter. I found
it has uses for good. Twitter's, not, you know, Twitter does have its uses for good. It's a tool. Let's see how people use the tool is the question.
Yeah, no, I when I was a public defender, a lot of what public defenders do is hurry up and wait. You have a range of cases on in a day, and you wind up sitting in court watching a parade of horribles and racism and tragedies. And I started actually, this is years ago, tweeting from inside of court as a way to hold power accountable and also just raise awareness about these everyday injustices. And folks like Alec Baldwin started following me, and I wound up meeting Fiona Apple through it. And what's been amazing, even before COVID, is seeing how folks like Fiona and Alec and other people with enormous platforms who have a lot of things on their plates and a lot of things that they need to do are really moved, not just by the kind of horrific, gross injustices that were previously, maybe like a decade ago, heard about, like the people who are innocent, 30, 40 years exonerated, but these everyday injustices, people jailed pre-trial on low-level offenses, people, you know, serving short stints for stealing a bar of soap or petty larceny, and even thinking more in a more nuanced fashion about violence itself. You know, I know you, there was a segment earlier on today on WNYC around guns and how people are policymakers are thinking about addressing guns. Well, it turns out that actually the systems that are in place in the way we try to approach violence actually drives violence itself. In any event, it was Twitter and reaching out to them and getting immediate yeses. They were moved by the words more than anything, of course, just seeing what people were going through, but also the courage of these folks who are incarcerated in these horrible conditions, already facing retaliation, who signed their names onto this lawsuit and then went even further to allow their words to be spoken out there for potentially millions. And I've been really humbled by that support.
The project also deals with the idea that there are several crises that are converging during the pandemic. There's pre-trial incarceration. There's overcrowding. There is lack of medical attention. When you think about how these three things are colliding, is there any one of the three that if could be corrected, it might help the other two?
So the first thing for your listeners to understand is that all of the problems that you already heard through the sworn declarations and that we're talking about today, the overwhelming number of people who are detained pre-trial, a quarter of a million, more than everyone imprisoned in India, in the United States is detained pre-trial. The overcrowding, the lack of medical attention, the horrific treatment, treating people like animals, existed long before COVID and all the way up to COVID. And public defenders, frontline practitioners, people who are directly impacted, of course, have known this. COVID has just exposed it in a way that may, oddly be more relatable to a lot of people because we all are scared. We're all scared about social distancing. At least some of us are. We all are very careful about washing our hands and putting on masks. And so we can relate in a way we haven't been able to before, to thinking about, oh my God, 50 people to a cell, asymptomatic people with symptomatic people, being denied medical care in PG County, being required to pay $4 to fill out a form to get medical care where most people can't even afford that. These are just kind of just the more transparent examples of what's all happened and what's always happened. And to your point, You solve one problem, it's always better than solving none. But the cruelty and inhumanity that's been exposed during COVID really points out how deeply entrenched our system of mass punishment and mass criminalization is, and how needed and urgently so a kind of a complete overhaul.
So COVID sounds like COVID. You're saying COVID is a problem, but it's not the problem.
No, COVID exacerbated issues that long predated COVID, and the fact that our leaders across the board, in blue states and red states, New York City, New York, and Governor Cuomo and Bill de Blasio have been absolutely horrible when it's come to COVID response in jails and prisons. It's just exposed the failures of our system, and it's exposed really the need for overhaul of all this. There's some of the issues, are unique, but folks weren't getting soap beforehand. Folks weren't getting sanitizer. The food was horrible. It was contaminated. People were sick. And when they got sick, they got horrible treatment. It's just that even now, the fact that our leaders are unwilling to budge beyond that status quo of cruelty and humanity and racism, underscores how far gone we are.
My guest is Scott Hechinger. We're talking about gasping for justice. I do want to play one more clip and ask one more question on the other side before we go to break. This is a clip of sworn testimony of one of the people incarcerated in Prince George's County Jail. It's being read by Baratunde Thurston, the writer and the podcast host. And a heads up, some of the details of the conditions are graphic.
On May 22nd, I tested positive for COVID-19. I was put in the medical isolation cell. There was a guy occupying the cell. He looked sick and unclean, like he hadn't been able to shower for multiple days. Jail staff opened the cell door and let him out, and immediately ushered me into the cell. The isolation cell reeked of urine. There was feces in the corner of the cell and down the corner of the wall. The jail staff did not give me any materials with which to clean my cell. I spent 4 days in the isolation cell. During this time, I was unable to shower or call my attorney or my family. I really wanted to talk to my wife and kids to let them know what was going on. I started experiencing body aches. I did not know that body aches are a symptom of COVID-19. No one at the jail ever told me that they were. I did not get fresh clothes for 13 days.
That was Baratunde Thurston reading the sworn testimony. So, Scott, first of all, do we have any update on the conditions at Prince George's County Jail? And the second part of the question is, if somebody's listening to this and thinking, I would like to do something, I would like to get involved, what's a good way they can do that?
Okay, I'll go in order. Unfortunately, the news is not great in terms of the current conditions. The numbers were down for a period of time when this was kind of in the news. Like I said, there's settlement negotiations underway, which is, you know, which we're hopeful about. But I checked in, and as of yesterday, the number of people incarcerated was 723 in Prince George's County. That's a 39% increase over the past 4.5 months. In terms of cleaning supplies and medical services, people up until yesterday were reporting that folks have still not received soap in several weeks, and they also no longer have an adequate supply of soap. They have never, and they continue to not have any access to hand sanitizer. Similarly to other places around the country, it's considered contraband because of the alcohol content, even in a state like this, or even in a current crisis like this. And people are still reporting it takes an enormous amount of time to get medical attention, even if they're allowed to have it, and also report that fear of even asking for medical attention because of the conditions that Baratunde just described on behalf of the person who actually wrote it. When you get medical attention, you are quarantined. You're put in cells that are covered in, I'll just say this is graphic, that are covered in mucus, feces, and blood, and held there for long periods of time and trapped with other people. There's significant overcrowding, and last but not least, there's also a 23-hour lockdown that remains. The purpose of this lockdown, only 1 hour out a day, is to somehow protect people from COVID, despite the fact that they're not given any of these kind of cleaning materials. But when they're released for that 1 hour a day, they're released in groups of 25. And where are they going? The majority of them are going to the phones to call their loved ones. Mm-hmm. And so it just increases the problems. In terms of what people can do, people should, at least in Prince George's County, not in Prince George's County, with regard to Prince George's County, then go to gaspingforjustice.org. On the site, there's 4 actions that you can take so you can learn more. You can sign up to Court Watch, even if you're not in Maryland. So you can actually get on the phone and bear witness as judges and prosecutors order to detain people and hold them accountable in that way. And you can also give money to the bail fund to enable people to purchase their freedom. A significant portion of those who are incarcerated are there only because they don't have enough money in their pocket to buy their freedom.
My guest is Scott Hechinger, former public defender and founder of Zealous. Coming up after the break, we'll continue our conversation with Scott and speak with Cassandra Greer Lee, whose husband, Nicholas Lee, died from COVID-19 in a Cook County jail. We'll speak with her about an initiative called 132 Calls. More after the break. You're listening to All of It, and if you're just joining us, I've been speaking with Scott Hechinger, who's been a public defender and is currently the founder and director of an organization called Zealous. Zealous is behind a project called Gasping for Justice. It seeks to create awareness about the conditions of people incarcerated pretrial and are experiencing at Prince George's County Jail in Maryland. Zealous has another initiative to raise awareness about these concerns. It just launched yesterday and is focused on the story of one man who passed away from COVID-19 in Cook County Jail in Chicago. The man's name is Nicholas Lee, and his wife, Cassandra Greer Lee, who in addition to becoming an advocate, is a first grade teacher in the Chicago public school system and is joining us now to discuss this initiative called 132 Calls. Cassandra, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And first of all, I want to say we're sending love and light to your family and so sorry for your loss.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
The title 132 Calls, can you explain what it means, please?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Just the title alone, just bring back so much pain and agony and desperation. I called 132 times trying to get my husband help. My husband is not supposed to be dead. He really isn't. He walked into the Cook County Jail, a healthy man, and he left out in a body bag. I tried at the beginning of March to call to not only get my husband help and to get him moved, because don't forget, my husband wasn't even sick. He wasn't showing any symptoms, but he recognized there was two gentlemen on his tier, and his tier was a dormitory-style unit where he shared one common space with up to 50 other gentlemen. And I was keeping him abreast of the symptoms that I was watching on the news, that the CDC was telling us, because I wasn't knowledgeable about this virus, and neither was he. So when I became knowledgeable, I would pass the information on to him. And he said, Cassandra, it's two gentlemen that have these symptoms. He said, I'm scared. And I said, Nick, don't worry. And I told him different precautions to take as far as getting three different T-shirts. One, when he called me on the phone, to wrap around the phone and wash that immediately after he used that one. One to walk around with to cover his nose and his mouth because they said it was airborne. And just the third one, just for any type of emergency, to cover the pillows and just do whatever he could to try to take whatever precautions that he could. And I called to no avail.
When you were calling initially, who were you calling and why?
I was initially calling the facility where he was housed. Because I said, okay, we can start there because he wasn't sick, but we thought that he was going to get exposed with the other two gentlemen. And I was not only calling for my husband, I was going to tell him about the two gentlemen that was ill on his tier. So I was calling where he was housed, the Cook County Jail, to just ask to speak with a sergeant. And my husband gave me one specific sergeant name that he thought would help. But I asked if that sergeant wasn't available, any sergeant or social worker or anything I was looking for. But don't forget, I didn't receive an answer. No one answered the phone until March 28th. One Cook County sheriff answered the phone, and she informed me that due to the pandemic, they were short-staffed, and basically no one was really there. And I asked, I said, ma'am, are the social workers not available or they're not there? She said, they're not here in the building, sweetheart. I said, okay, can I please leave my information? But I also, before I asked her if I can leave my information, I asked her if I can be on hold and she go and get any lieutenant, any sergeant, anyone. And she informed me once again that there was absolutely no one that she could go and get. She couldn't even leave, you know, her post where she was stationed to work. And I told her, okay, so I left my number. She promised me that someone would call me back within 24 hours, never got that call.
My guest is Cassandra Greer Lee and Scott Hechinger. We're talking about 132 calls. So, Scott, explain the format of this project to our listeners, and then we'll play a little bit of a clip.
So, first of all, hi, Cassandra. Good to hear your voice and be connected.
Scott, how are you?
I'm okay. Thank you for sharing your story on here. You know, Cassandra and I don't know, it feels like yesterday, but it was months ago at this point, had a conversation. We spoke for an hour. We were put in touch by the Coalition to End Money Bond in Chicago and had just, you know, extraordinary conversation, mostly me listening and learning about kind of the horrors that she and her husband went through and other people went through. And what we decided to do was connect with local artists in Chicago, a range of visual artists, but also performing artists to think about how to interpret this powerful story. And the artists took over on the creative side and just used Cassandra's voice, her recorded words. It's a three-part series. The first installment of part one, called Morning Never Didn't Come, came out yesterday. The second film is going to come out in, hoping, like a week or two. And then the third by the legislature meeting in mid-November to discuss the Pretrial Fairness Act. And the format is, again, it's her words speak for themselves, and you just listen to them. And they're just punctuated by very simple, powerful kind of visual representations in black and white.
Let's take a listen to the audio portion. This is a clip from the animated short film that tells part of Nicholas Lee's story.
My husband was incarcerated at the Cook County Jail. He wasn't convicted of anything. The living conditions was deplorable. It was absolutely horrible. At the beginning of March, he noticed that there were two sick inmates on his tier. It was a dormitory unit where my husband and 50 other gentlemen shared a common space. So there was really nowhere for him to, like, social distance or self-quarantine. So he was taking the necessary precautions that he could with what he had, because he had no sanitizing products, no anything to clean around the area, just nothing.
So Cassandra, in the clip, I'm going to let people see the visuals for themselves. I don't want to try to describe them. But what did you think when you saw the final product?
I'm so appreciative, because people would never understand here in Chicago, and I know it's like this around the world, you know, they don't value inmates. They call them detainees and inmates. And for me to get the help that I'm receiving, because I was alone out here for a while until the Chicago Community Bond Fund and others reached out to me to help me and stand with me. You know, a lot of people close doors because inmate lives didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And for me to see this, what God blessed my husband with, it means the world to me. I'm forever grateful, because it's spreading awareness, because I don't want this to happen to another family. I don't want anyone to feel the pain that I'm continually going through daily. I don't want this to happen. That's why I'm out here fighting.
And you are fighting. I want you to, you're taking some of your energy and your grief and you're turning it towards advocacy. And I mentioned you were a teacher for a long time, more than 15 years. Two questions. One, what is it that you would like to see change? And what do you think people who are in charge, who could make a difference in this case, need to learn?
Let me start with the second question. People that's in charge need to learn that human lives are valuable no matter what situation that they're in. That's why we have a judicial system put in place. But my husband was found guilty and sentenced to death by the coronavirus. I feel as though the people that are in charge need to do their job and value everyone's life and know that they just, my husband was treated, they had a blatant disrespect for his life. And that's why I'm here, to let everyone know that Nicholas Lee's life mattered. It not only mattered to me, but it mattered to our family. And that's why I'm fighting. Also, what I would like to see change is that I don't think that's why I support the Pretrial Fairness Act, because you shouldn't have to be housed because you don't have the money and you haven't been convicted of anything yet. It's a lot of gentlemen and women that's back there that think that's just stuck back there because they don't have the means to bond themselves out. That's not fair. That's not fair at all. This is not. This is the United States of America. Like, this is horrible what's going on, and it's just been covered up for so long. And I'm learning the different things about these politicians and things since I have been out here fighting. And it's just a corrupt system that needs to be addressed. That's why I'm doing my best to shed all the light I can on all the negligence inside of the Cook County Jail with the Sheriff Tom Dart, with all of these politicians. It's just one big web of negligence, of lies, of blatant disrespect for human life. And that's why I'm out here doing the best I can to end this and to try to hopefully get people in here that may care and just do my best to shed light on the negligence.
Scott, if people want to see these videos, where can they go?
132calls.com. On there, you'll right now just see the first of the three, but the rest of the series will be up. And also, the site has information about actions you can take. And there's two. One is learning more and actually taking action around the Pretrial Fairness Act that's going to be taken up in Illinois. And to join Cassandra. Every Sunday she is out, probably more than just Sunday, but every Sunday she's out in front of the Cook County Jail, activating people, talking about what's going on, what needs to be done. If I lived in Chicago and traveling was easier, I'd be out there in a heartbeat. Mm-hmm. But if you're in Chicago, that's something that you can do.
My guests have been Scott Hechinger. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Cassandra Greer Lee. Cassandra, thank you for making time today and for being so candid.
You're more than welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.